Peter B. Collins, News and Comment. It's Wednesday, April 9, 2014.
I am woman.
In the United States Senate, the Democrats laid a little trap for the Republicans, and they stepped right into the doo-doo today. Democrats are making an election year issue of the pay gap between men and women. And I think that's a nice idea, but as I said yesterday, this is not the most important issue, and the way the Democrats are addressing it is for show. With the executive orders that were signed by President Obama yesterday, a handful of women across the country will see the issues of pay inequity addressed in some manner. But my view is that if Democrats really wanted to fix this problem, they would be supporting unionization. They would be trying to fix the problems at the National Labor Relations Board. Because when you look at pay equity issues, the place where women earn the same as men are in union shops where gender bias is not permitted in most cases to determine pay scales. And we hear, for example, the right wing challenge the inequity by saying, well, gosh, you know, in Congress, the men and women get paid the same. And they try to make the case that it's people with limited skills, not a gender issue, that relates to what they're paid today. And I would argue that with the decline of collective bargaining under trade unions in this country, that employers have been free to exploit workers and to create situations where they compete against one another, but the employers don't have to compete for the workers. We see that writ large in Silicon Valley, where it's been exposed in the last year or so that St. Steve Jobs conspired with the folks at Google and then added other tech companies, including George Lucas's empire. They all agreed not to hire each other's workers. Why? To keep workers from gaining any kind of leverage in the exchange of services for dollars. And so, yeah, the Republicans stepped in the doo-doo. They blocked the passage of a bill called the Paycheck Fairness Act, and they do accurately portray this as a bald-faced political ploy by the Democrats in this election year. But Mitch McConnell, who's in a re-election battle with a female candidate in Kentucky, and whose wife, Elaine Chao, served as the Secretary of Labor and made it a pro-employment labor department during the Bush administration. And Mitch McConnell says, you know, when it comes to American women overall, what we've seen over the past 5.5 years is less income and more poverty. Well, that is, of course, very lopsided because Mitch McConnell is rewriting history to eliminate the causes of the downturn. And that, of course, was greedy bankers and the failure of our government to regulate or prosecute wrongdoing. So this vote was 53-44, and the Democrats will probably try this again. Meanwhile, the do-nothing Congress, the House of Representatives, continues to do almost absolutely nothing. And it is pretty amazing, because last year they set the new low standard for congressional inaction, and this year they appear to be on par to beat it. But over at the Ways and Means Committee, they issued a questionable referral to the Justice Department, asking the Attorney General to begin a criminal investigation of Lois Lerner, the former Internal Revenue Service official who's been fingered by Daryl Issa and the Tea Party wing of the Republican Party, allegedly for discriminating against conservative groups who were filing for nonprofit status so they could obscure the source of donations for their political operations, the so-called dark money move. And it's amazing to see time and time again now how this story is rehashed or recast. Here's a line from the article in today's New York Times. The guy who promoted this vote, Dave Camp, who is the chair of the Ways and Means Committee in the House, he is quoted as defending the vote, but the article flatly states that Camp defended the vote, saying that the way the IRS had targeted conservative groups itself was unprecedented. Well, this, without using quotation marks, attributes a comment to Mr. Camp, but makes it seem like a fact that conservative groups were unfairly targeted by the IRS. And the examinations show that there were liberal groups who had applied for a 501c3 or 501c4 nonprofit status, and that because their operations were overtly political, that the IRS office in Cincinnati subjected them to greater scrutiny as well. And my bottom line is that none of these groups has an absolute lock, an expectation that they should be granted nonprofit status. That's what this whole Cincinnati operation is supposed to do, to approve or deny applications for nonprofit status. And because they delayed some of the approvals for some conservative groups, and we know that liberal groups in many cases face the same fate, well, the Republicans cherry-picked this, and now they want an indictment of Lois Lerner. And according to this Times article, it's largely unprecedented for the Ways and Means Committee to make a referral like this. It usually comes out of the Oversight Committee that's run now by Daryl Issa. So, as a referral, I don't believe the Justice Department is required to actually take action on it. But then if they don't, of course, that will become a new political football of its very own. Well, the struggle continues over the release and declassification of the Senate review of torture, interrogation, and detention, rendition 2. And Senator Feinstein spoke up yesterday saying that she wants the White House to manage the final declassification and not the CIA. And she's right about this. And it's absolutely preposterous for the Obama administration to duck responsibility and to allow the CIA to vet a document that we know is sharply critical of the CIA. That doesn't pass a fundamental smell test. But Jason Leopold, the prolific investigative reporter, is back at America.aljazeera.com again today with an update. The Senate report contains new details on the black site prisons that were operated by the CIA during the Bush Dark Ages. And we're learning, for example, that there was a black site, not in the Guantanamo prison complex itself, but just outside on the piece of property that the U.S. leases there. And this raises important questions because we know that in June of 2006, three prisoners were individually removed from the main camp. They were taken somewhere nearby, and the next morning they were brought back to the main camp, only they were dead. And we were told that they committed suicide. But it's been widely speculated that they were going to a black site operated by the CIA, and Leopold has confirmed that there is indeed one outside the main camp at Guantanamo. He's also confirmed a location at the base near on the island of Diego Garcia, and this is controlled by the United Kingdom and leased to the United States. And Leopold reports that the Senate document confirms that this agreement was made with the full cooperation of the British government. So they were in on it. Also, we learned that the CIA had told Polish authorities that this report or review, whatever you'd like to call it, was unlikely to identify the countries that cooperated with the CIA's detention and interrogation program. But we've known for some time that Poland was one of the locations. And Leopold confirms that the Senate report reveals that 20 prisoners were secretly detained in Poland from 2002 to 2005. Now, get this. That black site at Guantanamo, There were some prisoners who were taken there. They didn't know they were there. They were tortured and interrogated. Then they were flown back to places like Afghanistan and Morocco, and then officially transferred into Guantanamo. I know this sounds bizarre, but when you're running covert operations, you can do whatever you want, especially when you have unlimited budgets. So it's fascinating to see the details starting to emerge, and it's possible that the leaks that are coming from the report will actually all be published and common knowledge before the report is officially declassified and released. Also, Jason Leopold's done excellent in-depth reporting on Abu Zubaydah, who was the first person subjected to the torture tactics, and he confirms that Abu Zubaydah was subject to all of the torture tactics that were in the memos written by John Yoo and Jay Bybee, plus a couple of bonus moves. For example, the Justice Department legal memo authorized sleep deprivation for Abu Zubaydah for 11 consecutive days, but the people who were running the interrogation went for far longer. Abu Zubaydah was stripped naked, strapped into a chair, doused with cold water to keep him awake, interrogated, asked what he knew, and they say that they stuffed Abu Zubaydah into a pet crate. He was in there for as long as 2 weeks. He was shackled by his wrists to the ceiling of his cell and subjected to an endless loop of loud music identified as the Red Hot Chili Peppers. So, you know, the games that are being played over this report are really kind of silly. But that's how our government operates, and we will have to, be satisfied with a series of leaks instead of getting to see the report itself. I'm curious about a new book that's just been published, and I will get a copy and see if I can line up an interview with its author. The book is called The Wrong Enemy, and it's written by New York Times reporter Carlotta Gall. She has been covering the war in Afghanistan since shortly after September 11th, and this book, The Wrong Enemy, makes the point very directly that the real problem is the government of Pakistan and its intelligence agency, the ISI. She says, Pakistan, not Afghanistan, has been the true enemy. And by the way, I realize my accents are a little off. If I say Pakistan, I probably should say Afghanistan, but I'm not there yet. So excuse my inconsistency, but I hear so many Pakistanis say Pakistan that it seems right to try to match their pronunciation. Anyway, this new book opens with the Taliban's November 2001 defeat in Afghanistan, the way they regrouped at in Quetta, in the that city in Pakistan. Over the next several years, a sordid mix of Pakistan government officials, political parties, and militant groups provided refuge and aid to the Taliban and other Afghan insurgents. They even ran a special desk at the ISI assigned to handle Osama bin Laden. And that is quite a damaging revelation right there. So this is a very interesting book. It does beg a serious question. If Carlotta Gall has been writing for the New York Times and been in Afghanistan all these years, why have they not presented these issues with the clarity that her book apparently does? Because we've known about the role of the ISI in the original creation of the Taliban. And I have tried many times over the last few years to help people understand the difference between the Afghan Taliban and the Pakistani Taliban. But in our media, it's all lumped together, just the Taliban. And the Times bears some responsibility for that. So I'll see if I can get the book, see if I can get the interview, see if I can ask the reporter those questions in a very direct manner. And I want to mention today, I'm limited on time, so our podcast will be brief. 5 stories instead of 10. Should be back up to full speed tomorrow. My final story is a lawsuit that has been refiled by American sailors who went to the rescue of the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear power plant after the earthquake, tsunami, and meltdown that occurred there 3 years ago. And an original lawsuit brought by 79 sailors who said that they were exposed to radiation after being assured that the area was safe. Well, the original suit was thrown out because it had named the Japanese government. And technically, the government owns the plant, but they license it to TEPCO, the Tokyo Electric Power Company. And so the suit was redrawn and refiled and is presented simply against TEPCO, the utility. So I think this is a very important allegation. These are sailors serving on the San Diego-based aircraft carrier USS Ronald Reagan, and it was bringing food and water to the city of Sendai near Fukushima, and the Japanese authorities said that they had nothing to worry about. And so is the U.S. military responsible? After all, they gave the orders for these sailors to support these relief efforts. And frankly, I'm not sure who exactly is responsible, but I think it is important to protect the lives and interests of the sailors. We've already had at least one report of a child born with birth defects, and the long-term effects of exposure to this radiation, they will probably be significant, but as long-term effects, we won't know about them for a while. Hey, thanks for joining me today for News and Comment. You are authorized to share this podcast with absolutely anyone. I'm Peter B. Collins.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling.